The information and opinions presented in this podcast are based on research done at a particular point in time. The fields of medicine, surgery, psychology, etc. are constantly evolving as new studies and movements happen. Please take into account the year of any particular episode's publication, and as new information presents itself, we will do our best to release updated episodes on the topics. Listener discretion is advised for references to medical terminology of body parts. Unless otherwise stated, no one speaking on this podcast is a medical or legal professional and cannot provide medical or legal advice. Welcome to the Trans Field Guide.
Welcome back on the show.
Well, thank you.
Always good to have you on.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be on.
So, in talking about detransitioning, you know, we've got, just to kind of go over a very brief type of overview about talking about both medically transitioning and then medically detransitioning, also socially transitioning and then detransitioning. Detransitioning both all the way to assigned at birth gender, detransitioning to a non-binary gender, and just kind of the fact that there's a whole bunch of different reasons people do it, either out of necessity because they can't, they're not in a position where they can continue transitioning, or they are having negative medical side effects to something along the lines with medical transitioning, or they just decide that this was not the part of their path. Mm-hmm. Where to start with all that? Because it's a big topic.
It really is a big topic. And I mean, there's so many different reasons, you know, why people start transition, but then there's also the same amount of reasons why someone may want to, you know, detransition or stop the transitional process. I think there's not enough studies out there currently that talk about longevity of transition. So, like, what, I mean, a lot of the journal articles and even WPATH talks about, you know, in the first 5 years, this is what you're going to experience. And so, like, there's a lot of research, like, article after article about these are the side effects that happen if you're going from F to M or M to F. Like, you know, you pretty much have your first 5 years laid out for you as a trans person going through medical transition. But I think after that, there's a lot of unknown, and they're not, you know, a lot of researchers haven't really studied the longitudinal effects of being on hormones or, you know, the long-term effects of, certain surgeries. And so I think as people age and as people health changes as they age, like, things come up that I think the medical community as a whole has no idea how to, one, handle or are aware of. So I think that, you know, and then also, how does insurance cover this as we progress? And as, you know, we get a new president or a new, you know, wanting to do things or not do things or take away medical rights and those kinds of things, that really affects the community. And it doesn't just affect the people trying to start this process, but it also affects people that have been on, let's just say, hormones for years, and then all of a sudden their insurance won't cover it anymore. So, and they don't have the financial means to continue covering that. And so it's more out of the financial means that they can no longer transition. And so there's that kind of, you know, I don't know if I would really classify a lot of this as detransition, because it's not that they're any less trans or they're doing active steps to go the other way. It's more out of, you know, financial or even health reasons why they can no longer go forward in transition.
Kind of more putting a pause in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that if they had the financial means, would they continue hormones? Would they continue surgeries and those types of things? So I think, you know, we really got to look at that and maybe change the terminology a little bit too about this person's still trans. They're just in this state of their life where they can no longer afford, you know, to continue medically. But they may still be actively socially transitioned, a whole, you know, and legally transitioned. I think we need to talk about that too, is that there's, you know, a lot of times we don't talk about legal transition, and that's name changes and gender marker changes. And so those things stay the same with a lot of individuals, even if they're not able to afford hormones, or their medical doctor says your health cannot handle you being on hormones anymore. And I think too, like, because doctors aren't educated very well on trans and trans issues, especially around hormones and the use of hormones, that's the first thing they want to cut. So like when you, like, I know in my experience, when I go to a doctor that doesn't know me or isn't a part of my hormones, like if I go to someone outside of my doctor who prescribes me hormones, then they're always like, well, you might be sick because of your hormones. And it's like, that's the first thing they want to say. And it's like, wait a minute, I have a sinus infection. How are my hormones affecting my sinuses when the pollen count outside is like through the roof? And, you know, like, would you say this to a woman who was on birth control, or a man who was, you know, a cisgender, a female that was on birth control, or even a cisgender male that was using testosterone? Would that be your first go-to? Like, you need to stop your testosterone, or your, so I think some trans individuals that have to stop because their medical providers are saying that you're, you know, in a place that your health, is it really that, or are they just so unknown about their symptoms of their medical diagnosis that they're just like, okay, let's stop all the medications, including hormones, and not understanding that if I was told today that I had to stop taking hormones because of health reasons, one, I would want a second opinion, but I can afford to do that. Not all trans individuals can. And two, I would really want to see the research that shows that being on this hormone is affecting this particular diagnosis or this symptom of my diagnosis, the medical symptoms. Because my mental health would cause me, like, cause much more damage than me stopping. Like, I'm almost at the point in my life that if I was told, if you don't stop taking testosterone, you're going to die in the next 2 years, I'd be like, okay, like, I'm going to die in 2 years then. Like, that's how important for me, hormones are to my transition and my identity as, you know, a man. And so, I don't know. I think that, you know, some people might have to stop for different reasons medically.
Yeah.
But of course, I think, you know, what people fear to understand too is that, you know, for me, I think, you know, there's a lot of pressure when you say you're trans that you go ahead and start hormones. And I think that hormones aren't for every trans person. And I think that, you know, that's where counseling comes into play, not as a gatekeeping thing, but more as, hey, I'm not really sure this is what I want to do. And, you know, I've had people that I've known in my life that think, well, because I'm trans, now I have to go on hormones. And I'm like, is this really what you feel is right for your transition? Are you thinking that you're getting this message from social media or your friends that you, to be trans, you have to be on hormones? And that's not true either. So again, I think it's more about sometimes too, like, we have to explore, as, you know, even as myself, I've had to explore what trans means to me and how I want to transition. And some of that is exploring things. So it might be, you know, I might try hormones for 6 months and see, is this something that is a part? And some people get on hormones and it doesn't help, that dysphoria doesn't, you know, change anything. And they're like, this doesn't really do anything for me. And this is really not a part of my trans story and my journey. And so I needed to explore this option to make sure. And now that I know, then I don't want to, you know. But I think that's another thing that medically people have to understand, is that this is also sometimes part of exploring just what it, you know, what people want. And again, there's nothing wrong with someone being on hormones and going, you know what, this really doesn't make me feel more of something, or this is really not a part of my journey. I mean, it is part of my journey since that I tried it, but like, this isn't something I want to continue. And again, that doesn't make them any less trans because they're not on hormones. And I really think that, you know, again, I really feel like there's a societal pressure, and even from the trans community in itself, that, okay, when are you going to get on hormones? Like, when someone finally comes out, it's like, when are you going to get on hormones? And it's like, well, this person hasn't even been out for a month yet, and we're already asking them when they're going to take this medical step in their transition process. So
I feel like that also ties into part of why, even within our community, we do tend to stigmatize people who do want to either put a pause in their transition or actually take active steps to transition away from the direction that they were initially transitioning in. We've kind of, as a community, we've kind of adopted that rhetoric of to be trans, you must XYZ, and to be trans, you must have this particular life journey leading up to your decisions.
Well, and I really think that we forget that, like, the word transgender really is an umbrella term of all kinds of gender expressions. And so someone who identifies as trans just means that, you know, they're a part of this journey and this, you know, expressive of gender internally or outwardly expression of gender that's other than their cisgender, you know, I mean, their birth assigned, sorry for my language, you know, other than the birth assigned gender. So, you know, I think that I just think that there's this not awareness, maybe from, I don't know, I just think that people just, we shorten the word trans, and it's still the word, even when we shorten the word trans from transgender, it's still an umbrella term. Uh-huh. You know? And anyone who identifies that way, again, everyone's trans, you know, trans identity is uniquely theirs, and there's not any right way or wrong way to be trans. It's about learning to be authentic in yourself, and hopefully you're in a place safe, in a, you know, a place of safety that you can be yourself and express or not express things that you do and do not want to express. And so I think that's where I think sometimes as a community or even as society as a whole forgets that, you know, there's all this beauty in our community of all these different ways people are trans. And, I think we need to remember that there's so much uniqueness. And in the uniqueness, there's beauty, but there's also commonality in that as well. But, again, you know, even speaking with you, our transition stories are completely different.
Oh, yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that either. I think it'd be boring if we all transitioned the same, you know, to be honest. Yeah.
I feel like also if everybody had the exact same story, it would be really more easy for people to just be able to regurgitate what they heard, and everybody would just take it at face value. I know to a certain extent in the medical field, they already do that. It's like, as long as you say these certain story beats, then you're good. But I do feel just from what I've seen, like when you have two trans people talking with each other, there's a little bit more of that scrutiny there as far as like, because we want to be accepting, but we also want to be a little bit guarded to make sure that people aren't trying to fool us, if that makes sense. And I feel like that's also another layer to my hypothesis as to the another layer as to why there is that stigma, because it's the whole like, oh, well, you know, were you lying to us the entire time? That you were you just trying to like infiltrate our ranks, and now you're betraying us? Which is part of the reason why we really do need to work on destigmatizing exploration in general, as far as gender goes, because even if somebody comes into a trans space and says, I think maybe, or I don't know, then we still need to be very welcoming to that and allow that person to be able to kind of work things out for themselves without us being like, so when are you getting on hormones? Like, when are you having the surgery? That type of thing.
Well, and you know, to be honest, I've been a part of a group before where I saw there were a lot of pressure for this one individual, and, you know, and I sat back because, you know, I try not to bring my mental health license to the forefront when I'm hanging out with people. But there was just so much pressure for this person to make a decision. And it's like, well, let them, you know, they just are just exploring this right now. Like, why should they have to make this decision right this moment? And I get, like, hormones were a really great thing for me. And I do get excited when I hear someone talk about, oh, I'm going to start this journey. And I get all excited with them because they're excited too. And it's something we can share in our excitement. But if I have someone that I know personally or even in, across from me in a session, like, and they're like, I don't know, then let's really explore this. Let's, you know, or, you know, being a friend of, if I'm their friend, is more, you know, being accepting of that they're not ready to make a decision. And, you know, I have to also think back on my journey. It took me a long time to get to this point. And so once I got to this point, I was ready to go up and running because I was like, okay, I've waited all this time and all this part of my life. And so, like, let's get this show on the road. But that's not the case for everybody else. And, you know, I really think there are some people who know from day one, you know, that they're trans and that they're going to do these things at this stage and they're going to, you know, but there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, that they just have a feeling of feeling different and they try to, you know, learning about what that is and exploring spaces where they feel connection. And you're right. I think we as a community need to be open to someone saying, you know what, I don't know. I just know I'm different and I don't feel 100%, you know, aligned with my birth assigned gender. And so I'm exploring that. And so, and being accepting of that and, you know, kind to that.
And I also think that a conversation that we should probably bring to the table, just based off of things that I've seen from watching the stories of people who have medically detransitioned back to what they were assigned at birth, I feel like we do need to bring the topic to the table in support scenarios of the differences between societal gender roles versus gender identity. Because one kind of common thread that I saw in a lot of them was that they were unhappy with sexism or unhappy with their societally based roles for their gender and thought that transitioning would free them from that as opposed to exploring options of like gender nonconformance. And I feel like that's having that as, you know, this could be an option for you and that's okay is an important like discussion to have with people as well.
Yeah. And I also think that we need to talk about too, that even though a lot of us in the community are, you know, that really educate ourselves about our community, see that there's lots of different expressions and a lot of different identities even under the umbrella, and not everyone who, you know, is even a step away from their birth assigned gender and identity might not identify as trans or, you know, and that's okay too. And so, but we also need to talk about, like, there's still a lot of pressure in society and a lot of misinformation that if you're, there's either one or the other. So there is no, what I like to, instead of gray, I like to call the purple. Like, you know, there is no in between. There is no, you know, different identities. If you're not 100% female, like if you're born female, female at birth, and you don't identify as female, then you have to transition 100% to male or vice versa. And if you talk to older generation of trans individuals who transitioned earlier, you know, but like 10 to 20 years ago, they'll say that it was an all or nothing thing. You know, I have a really great friend who's been, you know, fully transitioned for over 20 years now. And, you know, she'll talk about that. Like, she feels more gender fluid in some cases. And, you know, wouldn't maybe have gone through the full 100% transitional process if she knew that that was an option. And so, and I think too, again, there's still that pressure. Well, you're not this, but you have to be other, instead of, again, that there's all these different identities and ways to express gender and identity. And again, just because you don't do it, like go through every single medical process, do transition, doesn't make you any less trans than someone who has. And so again, I think it's still this binary system still plays into a lot of people. And depending on where the area you grew up or the area that you live in, there might be these strict gender roles for each gender in a binary system, because your area of the, you know, in our country says there's only two roles, and you're either this or you're that. And so I think, you know, again, I just think there's a lot of societal pressure still that, you know, that forces the binary system of thinking. So, and I think too, that's where we might get some detransition stuff too, is that, okay, well, I don't feel like my birth assigned gender, so I'm going to make steps medically to transition. And then that doesn't feel right either, you know? So it's this, you know, I don't feel either or, and, but I'm being told I have to be one or the other. So that might be some of the cases too. But yeah, I was also thinking, you know, of another friend of mine that has had to pause transition several times because of, you know, job changes and insurance changes and financial changes. And as soon as insurance picks up, then hormones come back on board, and then change of job again, and then stopping of hormones, and, you know, can go 6 months without hormones, and but always picks them back up when they're able, have the means to do that. And so, you know, again, there's just a lot of different situations why someone medically would stop. Specifically, we're talking hormones, why they might stop hormones. And I know for my situation is I had a hysterectomy before I started my testosterone. So I had to make a, and that kind of forced my hand in a sense, and which was a good thing in, you know, in hindsight. But when I had my hysterectomy, and I had a full hysterectomy, and so I had to make a decision on what hormones I was going to go on. My doctor was a good doctor in town, and he said, you know, I know you're trans, and I really suggest that you start your, you know, seeking, and I can give you a referral, like, to start hormones, because with testosterone, because otherwise I'm going to have to put you on some form of birth control, for your hormone's sake. And cause you're too young to not have any hormones in your body. So if I had to stop testosterone, I would have to get on some kind of female hormone, because my body, I have to, like, otherwise I would have a lot more medical complications. So that might be a case too, where someone's had a medical procedure that they have to have hormones. And so if they're not on one, they have to take the other. And so that might be a reason why someone detransitioned too, and way out of their control too. So,
okay. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I know, of course, also, safety concerns being another big reason for people to need to either pause or detransition. At least medically, like, it doesn't make them any less trans on the inside, but there are definitely cases where they, because of family or because of places that they need to go or places that they live, they don't feel like it's safe for them. And so then they have to kind of, like, put the mask back on, essentially, just to be able to survive.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, is that, you know, there are safety concerns, safety in employment, safety in just living everyday life in your particular area you live in, and or it might be safety within family. You know, family starts to notice that you're changing, and they're not okay with that, and they say things like, we're going to disown you if you continue this process. And, you know, someone might not have enough support system outside their family system to be able to do that, or,
you know, might not think they can get another job. And so their job said something, and so they stopped the process. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why someone may, and I would really look at it, like you said, like a pause, like, or situational reason why they're not continuing the particular process. And I think that goes with social transition as well. A lot of what we've been talking about, I think, goes along with social transitioning is, and with social especially, there's a lot more exploring for people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's not this medical commitment to changing a physical, you know, body. But, you know, with social, it might be growing out your hair or cutting your hair or, you know, dressing differently. And you do that one time and it feels good, but then everyone says something negative to you about that. And so it's like, hey, oops, I can't do this right now. And it might be because of an age thing that you're living at home with, you know, parents who control, or you're living at home because financially you don't have a job and able to. And so you're still under following your, you know, parental, you know, or, you know, rules or whatever to live under their roof. And, you know, again, you might dress differently at work and they say something like, hey, this isn't in dress code for your gender. And so, or your, you know, and so then someone may have to backpedal on what they wear to work, but maybe at home they can wear what they want to. So again, I think, you know, those are some of the situations, but again, someone may decide to wear nothing but, you know, different clothing of, you know, of more towards the opposite gender they were born and are assigned at birth. And, you know, then they try stuff on and it doesn't feel right. And so, or like today, I feel like I'm going to wear a suit and tie or a tie to work. And then tomorrow I'm going to wear a skirt. Like, you know, there's also this thing called fluidity, and people identify, you know, where they feel more something one day and more of something else the other day, or a blend of all kinds of gender identities all at one time, and they're able to express those things. And again, that dressing one way and then another way the next day or even the next month doesn't, again, make them any less trans, and it doesn't mean they're detransitioning. It's just they're expressing their gender identity in the way that is authentic to them in that moment. And I really feel like that's not wrong either. And I think some people would classify that as detransitioning, and it's really not. It's just fluidity. And again, you know, I think for myself, I did a lot more social transition for a longer period of time before I started medically transitioning, but it was baby steps. It was, okay, I'm going to get a short haircut, but it was, in my case, it was more like a pixie haircut. And so it looked still feminine, but yet it was short hair. And then it became more and more of a masculine cut over time. But it was this slow transition. But if I got to a point where I wasn't confident in myself, or society was saying stuff negative and I got all this negative, or the people in my life that I considered support systems were anti my hair, you know, I don't know if I would have felt pressured to, you know, do other things. And of course, I was out of the house when I started doing this and making my own money. And so when I would get negative comments from especially my parents, I would say, well, it's hair. It grows back if I wanted to. And I like this. And too bad you don't. I don't give a crap, you know. So, but that took a long time for me to gain my confidence to be able to say that to people, especially when I wasn't dependent on them for my basic needs. And so, or even my support system, like if my, you know, I love my parents to death, you know, but if they all of a sudden said, we're against your transition and we want not, if you, we don't want you in your life because you're trans, then I'd say bye. Like, because I have enough other support system. I mean, it's, you know, wonderful that they support me, but again, I'm in a place in my life where I can do that. Not everybody else is. And so it's important for the community to realize that not everyone has these great support systems or a job situation where they can be trans and out and people don't care that they're trans at work. And there's not this fear of being fired for being trans. I mean, or housing, like, you know, there are some places that are, if they find out you are, you know, trans, they'll say you can get out of our rental property. They, you know, so, and other housing, you know, so I think, especially in the South. And so I think, you know, I think, again, I don't think people necessarily are any less trans, even if they have to do things that go back to their, you know, assigned gender, you know, at birth, that I don't think that makes them less trans. But there are cases of individuals who, again, it's about exploring, especially with social transition. Like, that's exactly okay to do. And I've seen it in kiddos, too. I've seen some kids who I know are trans kids, man. Like, they're 4 or 5, and they know they're trans, and they go through the whole process and never waver. But then I have seen other, you know, I've seen other cases where kids explore, and that if they're in a healthy environment where the parents allow them to explore, then, you know, then they grow up to be healthy individuals. But kids explore, and adolescents and young adults, and even us older adults explore too. But, you know, that's the time for exploring, and, you know, you hope people around them are giving them safe spaces to explore. But if they do something for a while and then realize, and then, you know, they do other things, again, it doesn't mean that they were any less of anything. It's just that this is a part of life to explore. And again, I think we need to be more understanding of that.
I definitely agree with that, because it's, and even if they do any amount of medical transition and then reach a certain point and go, oops, this isn't what I needed. We do still need to be supportive and be like, okay, well, you know, you do what you got to do. We'll still be here, type of thing.
Yeah. And I haven't read much research on surgery and people like, but I know that those who identify as trans and go through surgeries medically for transition there's a really small, like, it's like a 1% or even less than that of the research I've seen on this topic that regret having surgery. So, like, you know, I think people are like, oh, you're going to regret having top surgery. And it's like, no, I've made this decision. I've educated, I've researched, I'm at a place in my life where I know. And even, you know, people younger than me can have that same understanding. And I think when people really do commit to surgeries, they're really sure that this is something they want. Like, I haven't heard of someone, well, I'm just going to get top surgery just to try it out. Like, it's not, that's usually not the step in exploring. And so I haven't heard, and I personally don't know anybody that's had surgery and then now doing steps to have reversal surgery. And the regret part is real, out of all the surgeries, it's so, so small percentage. So it's not even like significant, like statistically significant on how many people regret surgery afterwards. Now, more people regret things, not regret, but more people are picky about like, oh, this line isn't as straight, or my nipple isn't, you know, was attached a little off, you know, like that's more of what people notice about their surgeries than, I'm talking more top surgery, but that's the stuff that people are, when they complain about surgery, that's what they're complaining about, not the actual having the procedure.
Yeah, like they would still get it again, mm-hmm. like if given the opportunity. Surgical mistakes and malpractice aside, like I know I haven't heard I haven't heard of anybody getting any surgical procedures reversed out of a just like oopsie poopsies. I like did this and I don't like it. I have heard of stories of say like trans women needing to get breast implants removed out of safety reasons, like things of that nature of like, you know, I'm not in a safe environment to be presenting female. And you can't exactly toss a binder on over breast implants, so sometimes that's just an unfortunate necessity. But yeah, like it. Most of the stories that I've heard of people medically detransitioning, they had been on hormones for like maybe a few months to a couple of years, had not gotten anything surgically done, but realized that being on hormones and transitioning and presenting as the gender opposite to what they were assigned at birth was not the magic bullet that made all of their sadness disappear. Which is unfortunate that they were in a position where they had to go through all of that, because that's a tough roller coaster to go on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also think we need to talk about medically, you don't have to be on hormones and then do surgery. Like, there's a lot of different medical ways to transition, you know, and some people never get on hormones that are trans, and, you know, they do surgical procedures instead, or they have one surgical procedure, and that's enough. That's their trans journey. And so I think too, like, you know, I think what we hear about more often and what more often people do is that when they start to medically transition, it is getting on hormones, and then it's certain surgeries. You know, I know with most trans men, it's, you know, I get on testosterone, and then I get on, you know, I want top surgery is the first surgery I want to have, you know, and then the second surgery might be, bottom surgery. It may not be bottom surgery. It may be, you know, maybe something to do with facial hair, and, you know, that might be a surgical procedure where I do some implants there, or, you know, maybe some other chest body sculpting kind of things. But again, you don't have to have all those things. You don't have to have any of those things, and you're still trans. And so, yeah. I've heard more of people getting on hormones and then stopping hormones, because in the sense of, okay, I tried hormones, that wasn't what made me trans, so I'm going to stop. It's not something I want to continue because this isn't part of my trans identity, is more often what I see. And then, of course, there's always those individuals that have to take pauses because of certain situations, whether social or financial or medical situations. It's, you know, unless you have a personal relationship, you don't get to judge that person. And you really don't get to, what I mean is, you don't get to judge that person even if you're friends with them. But, like, you know, if you don't know their story, you don't know what's going on, then you can't make a really formulated, like, why is this person doing this, and understanding. And so, like, those that aren't friends with that person or don't know them really should, you know, back off and allow this person to do what they need to do for their life and their happiness and to express their identity the way they need to. And then, you know, if you're their friend, is to just be supportive through this process. And, you know, I think, again, like, it's okay. Like, you know, I would have told you, you know, maybe 15 years ago that I was going to be genderqueer for the rest of my life and I was never going to transition. But, you know, like, things change. So, you know, I think it's just that this is hard, you know, in a lot of cases. It's a big decision to start doing this process. And, again, I wish our society allowed for more exploring of gender identity and of different expressions of identity, so people could really find the identity and safe places and not be judged for exploring and trying things and, you know, then going, oh, that's not really makes me feel good, so I'm going to do this differently. And it not be something looked down upon, that it's just, okay, this is part of this person's process and their journey through life, you know?
Yeah. 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 That's all I have to add on to that.
The perfect world, right?
Yeah. That's kind of part of the reason why I'm trying to get like these types of topics onto the podcast is to kind of get that across of like, you know, we need to be a community and be there for each other. Even if any individual person feels like they no longer identify the same way as they did when they first joined the community, they can still be a part of the community.
Right. I mean, I think those individuals have more insight to being an ally in some cases than other people who haven't gone through an experience of exploring self or identity. You know, I think they could really be a support system for people that are exploring and a big advocate for the community too about what they've faced and, you know, what they've gone through with identity and transition and then, you know, exploring and things like that. And, you know, what I love about our community, if we talk about the LGBTQ plus community as a whole, is that people transition in within the community all the time. I mean, you know, in my day, like in my adolescence, was everyone came out as bisexual at first, even though they're really, I mean, there are people who really truly identify as bisexual. And, you know, but that was kind of like a stepping stone for a lot of people as, okay, I'm bi because it's softer and people are more accepting of someone being bisexual. And then go, you know, as they explore that more, realizing, oh, I'm not bi, I'm actually gay or I'm a lesbian. And then, you know, so like even within my journey, like at one time I said I was bi and then I was a lesbian and then now I'm a transgender male that, you know, so like, I mean, I've transitioned through within the community. So I think, you know, the community as a whole has seen individuals, if every individual talked about their journey within the community, you would see that we've all identified more than, you know, we've transitioned within the identities of our community, you know, for those of us that have been around a long time, yeah. You know, we've gone through identity changes. And but that's what the beauty about, I think, of this community as a whole is that, you know, we allow people to be in the community who want are loving and supportive of each other and through these processes. But again, I think, again, when someone's like, oh, I'm not going to be a part of the community or I'm not going to identify me, you know, with the LGBT part of the community, then, oh, you're not really a part of our community. You know, I don't know what that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's that exclusionism is hard for me to wrap my mind around because, and you see it all over the place. You have the people who want to, like, drop everything except for the L and the G.
Mm-hmm.
And you have people that, there's, like, an entire discourse about whether or not asexual people should be in the community, which my hot take is that they totally should. And you have all those kinds of things.
Well, and I know generation by generation things change too. And, you know, I feel like a lot of my clients who are and my friends who and even my cousins who are young, like in their, you know, high school, early 20s, kind of young, they're more accepting of people doing whatever they want to, even if it changes day by day. Overall, it seems. I mean, of course, there's always exceptions to that rule, but you know, I know that, like, I have some friends who identify as lesbian that are, you know, they're 10 years older than I am, around 10 years, and they just don't get this trans stuff because they're also masculine, like, in their presentation of gender within the lesbian community, they're more masculine, and they're like, why can't you just be masculine? Like, why do you have to, I don't get this trans thing. Like, they really have a hard time wrapping their head around transgender and why, you know, they saw me as, even when I was identified as genderqueer, they didn't get that either. It was like that wasn't a part of their experience within the community. And so it's harder for these particular individuals to wrap their head around it. So I think it's, you know, I think I have hope because the younger generation tends to be okay with people trying things and going, okay, that didn't work for me. Now this, I'm going to try this. Or I identify this way. Okay. That identity didn't really resonate and sit with me for long term. Now I'm going to identify this way.
and or I'm just not going to identify as anything. And, you know, because I don't want labels, I don't want identity, where I think, like, my generation, we wanted a label. Like, a label meant a lot. It meant community. It meant all these kinds of things. But I also see movement of not classifying and not identity and, you know, too, as well. So maybe the lack of identity in some cases will allow people to explore more and, you know.
I can definitely see that, because then it's like, well, if I haven't put a label on myself, therefore I haven't, like, put a stake in the ground and said, this is where I'm camping. Like, so I can totally see that. And I feel that that's kind of a, also kind of a way to not feel like you're, quote unquote, the 10-step gay, where you do go through all of, I'm going to try this label on, I'm going to try that label on. But it's also the more you learn and the more labels you learn about and the more, concepts that you come across, it kind of give, once you are able, as long as you're open-minded enough and you take the time to kind of, like, understand what it's about or look into it and stuff, then you get more of an opportunity to be like, does that fit me? Yes or no? And then you can either say, no, this one isn't quite for me, or, yeah, this seems about right, until you find something else that fits a little bit better.
And I think too, with identity, and, you know, and I'll speak for myself, is that, you know, there's a little bit of a grief for me to leave the lesbian community. Like, I had a lot of good friends, and they don't always understand the trans thing. And I've lost some lesbian friends through my transition, because they all hang out with lesbians. And if I don't identify that way, then it's hard for me to, I don't know, it's just different. And so I had to grieve the loss of that identity and I was able to do that very in healthy ways. And sometimes I'm still sad about not being a part of that particular community, you know, because I, you know, really enjoyed the people I met within that community and able to be in those spaces and not be seen as an outsider. Where, you know, it's really odd for me at times, because society sees me as a, you know, a white male, and, you know, I typically am attracted to female presenting, and so identities, and so, you know, I'm seen as a heterosexual white male in society in a lot of cases, and so that's, that whole new identity piece from how society sees me is very different, because I've always been other, and I've always been seen even in society as other, and so there's this weird of, where do I fit? Because I don't feel like a heterosexual male. And so, you know, even in my identity, like, you know, I feel very queer at, you know, at times. And some days I feel very feminine, and I'm okay with that. And so, like, I don't know. It's just, I've had to kind of grieve and process a lot through identity change and loss of community in some senses. And, you know, I don't know. It's just different. And, you know, I think people, you know, that go through transition and then have to, you know, detransition, or that they real, you know, they change how they feel and how they identify, you know, through their exploration, they, you know, change those things and feeling community and things like that. Like, they're going to have to grieve the loss of those communities too. And, yeah. And I think as a community as a whole, with all of our, you know, lovely ways we identify, that we need to be supportive of people changing and helping them find new spaces that they feel connected and supported. And, you know, I don't know. I just hope that, especially us and that are older in the community, can really, you know, be there for other people that go through this process of, you know, we see you, we hear you, and, you know, we're not going to shun you from our groups because you no longer fit all the check boxes that somebody made up anyways. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I also,
Oh, I do just want to say one thing on legal transition. Like, with legal transition, I also see, I haven't heard of very many people going back on the legal transition, unless it's a, you know, a reason for medical. Like, I think there's one thing that we haven't really touched on with legal transition is that that affects insurance. So let's say, and of course, I hate that I'm always talking from the trans male perspective, but, you know, I am a trans male, so I don't like to speak for, you know, our sisters in the community, because that's not my experience. So I know as a trans male, if I change my gender marker legally, then if I need some kind of female procedure that's seen as medically female procedure, my insurance isn't going to cover it. So, like, if I need a hysterectomy down the road as a trans male, but my gender marker says male, I may have to pay full out of pocket for my hysterectomy, even though it's a medical necessity procedure. They're going to be seeing that as an elective surgery for a man. And because our medical community has not caught up to us as, you know, as trans individuals, and especially our healthcare system, as many know that, you know, it's all wrapped up in this political bullshit. And so, you know, a lot of times, a lot of insurances won't cover it because you change your gender marker. Now, there are some progressive insurance companies and plans that, you know, they see if a doctor says that this is medically necessary, they don't question that. But I've heard of older trans males that have been on hormones for 5 to 10 years needing hysterectomies and can't get them because it's their gender markers change. So I think I think I could see why someone would, quote unquote, you know, detransition legally in order to get healthcare services that they need for a particular reason. But that's going to be hard. I mean, to go back on that as well, I mean, that's money out of pocket TV. And, you know, a judge may not necessarily grant that. Or if you want to re-get that again, they may not grant it a second time. So, you know, there's just, I mean, there's a lot of risk. There's a lot of risk with legally stuff.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I was thinking about as you were talking about it, was like, you know, if you can even convince a judge to let you change your gender marker back. I mean, like, realistically, we shouldn't have gender markers on any legal documentation. There's my other hot take of the day.
I agree.
Literally nobody on a legal standpoint should care what my gender is. The only person who should care what my gender is my doctor, and that's only for medical reasons. Mm-hmm. Like,
and my insurance shouldn't change because I'm either, you know, whichever gender I am either. Like, if I need a, if a doctor says I need this for my health and insurance covers that health procedure, then it shouldn't matter what my damn gender is on a damn document.
Oh, yeah. Or even, like, the life insurance, because recently I, like, updated my life insurance and they called me with all of these medical questions and stuff like that. And so I want to say that on my life insurance policy it says male, even though my legal gender marker change hasn't completed yet.
Can you hear something crazy about gender marker real quick?
Sure. Is
that, and I think that, you know, I have a friend who will help people with this, but if you get buried, your death certificate will have your legal gender marker on your death certificate.
Gross.
Yeah, so that's something I think people need to be aware of too, that in documentation it doesn't have a place for transgender, or, you know, you are legally, they have to put your gender marker on your legal, that's what's legally documented. So that's just an FYI.
Okay. I don't like it.
I don't like it either. I think I should be able to be buried how I want to be buried.
Well, and especially on, like, a death certificate. Like, again, why do you need a gender marker? You're dead. Like, what's it going to affect?
When I die, I'm going to be disrespected if I don't get this gender marker change.
Oh, my God.
Like this episode? Tell someone about it. Have any questions or concerns? Please feel free to send an email to transfieldguide@gmail.com. Also be sure to subscribe to keep up with the latest episodes. Stay safe, and remember, I'm proud of you.